Welcome to More Life, the Reentry Podcast, where we explore the transformative journey of reentry after incarceration. I'm your host, Venkivia Garner. Each week, we bring you powerful interviews with experts in the field and the voices of those who have lived through the experience. Our mission is to bridge the gap between scholarly insights and personal stories by shedding light on the challenges and triumphs faced by formerly incarcerated individuals. We explore the latest research, policies, and practices while also hearing firsthand accounts from those who've been impacted. Join us as we uncover the realities of reentry, challenge misconceptions, and inspire hope. Whether you're a professional working in the legal system, a family member, an advocate, or someone navigating reentry yourself, More Life the Reentry Podcast is here to inform, inspire, and ignite change. Well, it's really nice to be here, and I'm glad I was able to meet you here at this convening that we're at. Just to give our audience a little bit about what we're going to kind of facilitate discussion about. As y'all know, we have been having a series on voting rights and talking about the history of felony disenfranchisement and the impacts of felony disenfranchisement on people who are system impacted. We've been walking through each episode talking about what's happening in the current movement of restoring voting rights and how we can continue to be involved, whether people have the right to vote or if they don't have the right to vote. So we have Mr. Raheem here, who is going to go into a great discussion with us today about some of the work that he is doing, as well as his experience and how that has fueled his advocacy and the work that he's doing in Tennessee. So to start us off, do you care to just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background?
Yes, sir. Well, thank you. And Raheem is fine. Mr. makes me kind of feel a little like, oh, am I way up at it? Hey, he's not what. So I am originally from Nashville, Tennessee. And, you know, what brings me to this space, you know, and the way I met you here in Denver is that I am formerly incarcerated. I was caged for 26 years of my life from age 18 to 44. And within that 26-year span of being incarcerated, I received a life and 20-year sentence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I learned a lot. I grew a lot. I challenged myself a lot. And apparently I survived the prison industrial complex, not without scars. However, through that educational process of just having real life experiences, I paroled in 2015 with a full scholarship to attend American Baptist College. I left prison with like 15 to 18 college credits. I learned how to organize in prison. I started a lot of things in prison, like the Project New Beginning. I co-founded an insider organization, co-founded a school, SALT, Schools for Alternative Learning Transformation. I brought meditation and yoga and science of mind into the prison system in Riverbend Maximum Security Institution in Nashville, Tennessee. And so a lot of my formation of the person that you're talking to today was solidified inside of a correctional facility in Nashville, Tennessee, or across Tennessee. And when I left prison in 2015, I had a mission and I had a mandate from many of the insiders that I was not going to turn my back on the people on the inside, that I was going to figure out a way that I could help more people be released from prison as an act of freedom. Because at a certain point in time, you're punished when you go to prison. That's the sentence, that's the cage. And it's hard to get out of prison from a physical perspective, which is why, you know, I wanted to do this, have this conversation with you, that you have an interest in reentry. I think that's huge. And reentry is part of a process that doesn't end with the body walking out of prison. And so right now, the work that I'm doing, particularly around voting, is inspired by being that I was born in this country. Mm-hmm. And that I wanna make a contribution, I wanna impact this country, Tennessee. And currently, 470,000 people are not able to vote. And am I really free? Though I've been out of prison for 9 years, graduated from college summa cum laude, first generation college graduate, gave the commencement speech. My mama saw me walk, you know? Mm-hmm. something I never even imagined, right? Yeah. And here I am in Denver, but am I really free if I parole in a life sentence? So, I don't know if that's a tear, if it's just watery eye, but reentry has not been an easy task. However, my best day in prison doesn't even compare to my worst day not in prison. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just happy to be alive and to use my voice, my agency, the organization Unheard Voices Outreach that helps prepare prisoners to be released through parole preparation, their family members, advocacy, help create legislative policies that assist people in their reentry, and being a community organizer, connecting with the family members who love someone in prison, and being a symbol of hope, not just for them, but also the people in prison. Mm-hmm. And so my life is kind of married to the movement, and the movement is, you know, power to the people in a democracy, you know, that every voice counts.
Absolutely. So can you tell us a little bit about the work you are doing, the organization that you you run in Nashville, and some of what your initiatives are?
Yeah, so with Unheard Voices Outreach, just as the beginning phase of what we were doing, it's to support people who have been in prison for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of our work has been helping to get long timers out, people who parole life sentences. Mm-hmm. And we've been probably the most successful organization in advocacy in the state of Tennessee in assisting people who would be considered to have serious offenses with reentry. And I noticed that there were some gaps in our ability to influence change. For example, I paroled a life sentence. Now, a life sentence is a death sentence in the state of Tennessee because the person actually has to survive 51 calendar years in prison. And so when we were able to get a bill out of the Senate subcommittee and onto the floor and get a overwhelmingly majority vote in a ultra-conservative Republican majority state, and then to go to the House and we can't even move it out of subcommittee, that really rubbed me the wrong way. And so that took me into a different phase of this work rather than just focusing on helping people get out of prison. How could I take the model of the organization, which is building bridges to freedom, and create an arm that would actually become a bridge to prison? And what came out of it was the Bridge to Freedom movement, which we sent to the voices of family members who love someone in prison. And they fit into a different category. And this is the work that we're doing now that we're focusing in on, because we believe this work, which works with the person in prison, their family member who is not in prison, it builds a culture around how to survive loving someone in prison, but how to remove the stigma from feeling like, you know, that there's someone in prison that you're ashamed of that person. But even more than that, how to challenge the people who say they love people even if they are in prison. And so we've incorporated some religious ideas from Matthew 25 to visit someone in prison. And so one of our initiatives that we have is to increase visitation by 25% all across the state in 2 years. And what we know is this reduces violence. We know that this encourages the morale of a person on the inside. And it also supports the reunification of the family and even having friends. And so we're asking people to join bridgestofreedom.org and to sign up and to answer the questions. How do you want to participate in creating a different society here in Tennessee? And it's, I spoke with you yesterday about how do we create another chance for people, you know, who are sometimes, you know, in and out of the criminal legal system. And that work, along with the coalition work that I'm involved in as an individual, but also organizationally, we work with statewide organizations. Really, I'm calling them national Free Hearts, mm-hmm. that are statewide organizers that are putting forth legislation that will help people get their voting rights back. But building community and influence with the people, power with the people, mm-hmm. we're involved in that. And I think the only other thing that I would say is I think it's very important of what we're doing is that we're forming an inclusivity, a community where the people on the inside have just as much a vote and a right to speak on how we move on the outside as the people on the outside. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're listening to our community. And so, I mean, I'm very excited about it. This is something that I didn't dream about, but now that I'm doing it, it's fulfilling. Mm-hmm. And I'm meeting so many people who are doing the same things, like just being here in Denver and other places I've been. So yeah, it's organizing now at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, every person is unique.
Mm-hmm.
And it's decisions that are made sometimes. One person goes this route. Another person goes this route, that route. The person that goes all the way to the point to where, you know, you may end up harming someone and be held accountable for that. Is that something that as a society we can say, okay, well, that erases your humanity or erases, you know, your right to have a voice in the conversation of a society, of a country that is still growing? I'm saying no. And the history of this nation says that to say that we don't have a voice would be hypocritical because of some of the things that we deem to be criminal now built this country.
Yeah.
Religiously, from a Christian perspective, if Jesus is the person that is looked to, forgiveness was one of the biggest things that a person could do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is to forgive 70 times 7. And so no matter where we turn, the principles and values says that people like me should be given another chance.
Mm-hmm.
But when we go into society, what we're seeing is felonism, which is the social, political, economic, and many other forms of removing people from their humanity and treating them different, these isms. Felonism is a real thing. It's these barriers. So I believe that I have a right to participate fully in society. I'm paying my taxes. You know, I went to school. I contribute in a positive way. I abide by the law. I'm just, you know, I got a pass. So does this country. So why should my voice count? And now over 470,000 voices like mine that are not being counted.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to do this work.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause some people just don't know and they need to see that the stigma or the image of what you think someone who goes to prison is, it doesn't even look like that. And so we cover all the bases.
So what are some ways that people can become civically involved in their communities or in the neighborhoods of which they live in? How can they jumpstart that civic engagement?
Well, one way is for those who understand the importance of civic engagement is to partner with grassroots organizers and help us create the right atmosphere to bring civic engagement back into the schools. Because they took civic engagement, home economics, out of the schools.
They
right?
did.
And so people don't make those kind of decisions without, you know, a prior strategy and a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have to do is talk to people as people. Get rid of all this jargon and just cut through all the chase. I know you may not think your voice matters, but you paying taxes allows for the state of Tennessee to accumulate quite a bit of funding. And having a voice, you have a right to say how you would like some of that funding to be directed within the communities. Because the politics of a society and the taxes and voting, it all goes together. People don't understand. They think people are just making policies and the policies affecting our lives. And sometimes they're so distracted, they don't even care.
Mm-hmm.
And so our job is to show them where their interests align with what we're doing. And we have to show them that, you know, civic engagement can just be talking about, you know, how a person can get their voting rights back. Talking about, hey, mama, hey, dad, you don't vote. Why don't you vote? And then listening to why they don't vote and then understanding those narratives and then presenting an alternative narrative for, you know, why, you know, you probably should vote. Because we can talk a whole lot about how many people died about, but in the current, the existential, the right now, a lot of people are too distracted. And so as an organizer, we have to get on the ground with the people, meet the people face to face, and I'm looking at you like now. And then we just have to have those conversations and allow for them to ask questions and be able to have a response when they talk to us that they can appreciate. But it has to be about building relationships.
Right. Building relationships is at the core.
At civic engagement.
Yes.
And
And honestly, I believe, you know, building connection relationships with people is how we evoke change.
Oh, absolutely. Showing common interests. Mm-hmm. Showing where, you know, your needs aren't being met. And here's some money over here that the government has, and they're not even, you know. You need to access that. You need to ask them about that, right? And people don't know. That's a civic engagement also is like taking a field trip. Like, they took us to the zoo when I was in school. You know what I'm saying? It took us to these places that really had no... It didn't groom me to be a president of the United States of America or a senator or, you know what I'm saying? It's almost like public schools, I mean, Cradle Prison Pipeline. You know, I worked with Children's Defense Fund my first 2 years when I got out of prison. I met Marion Wright Edelman, strong leader, always concerned about kids' rights. And when I think about the prison, the Cradle Prison Pipeline, the school to prison pipeline, and the literacy scores, all of that affected me. And all of that's affecting our young people today. And so civic engagement really intersects with every part of a society and how, you know, the people exercise power. Mm-hmm. So we got to be creative around creating interest. And in Tennessee, we got some good creative stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no doubt.
So stand on that of creating interest and exercising power. What message would you share with those who may feel disconnected or with the idea of voting, civic mm-hmm. participation, mm-hmm. Particularly for those who are system impacted?
Yeah, you know, my first message or the first part of a conversation, this is a conversation that I have to have with this block of people, is that I understand mm-hmm. why you don't see how this matters. Because you have not seen how this matters. Whether it's Democratic, Republican, yeah. In your life as an individual, you don't see how it has impacted your life. Mm-hmm. What it has done for you to be engaged politically. So I first want to begin by saying I understand that, I empathize, I sympathize, I feel you on that. But now let me challenge you on whether or not you're asking yourself the right questions about that process. You know, I want to know, how much do you know about it? 9 out of 10 times, they don't really know much about that process because that process has been like a foreign world mm-hmm. for them. Because if my parents haven't been involved, my leaders, my preachers don't tell me about, you know what I mean? So why should I care? Yeah. So my job is to say, okay, I get that. Now, let me talk to you about in the 80s when I was in prison. I mean, in the last part of the 80s and 90s when I was in prison and I saw people in prison running for Senator Khalil Law Alameen. I saw people running campaigns in prison. And that, you know, before that, the early 80s, politicians were having to go into prison and try to get their votes, right? Why? And then explaining to them that there's power in the vote. This is why there's power in the vote, because when people say they represent your interests and they're taken from you, see, like money that comes out of your pocket, it goes into the government, you have a right to decide how that money is being spent, right? Now, if they're going to spend $30,000 or $40,000 on incarcerating a human being, caging a human being, and only spend $5,000 to $10,000 on educating, what are they saying is more important when we know, and we all know that the value of money carries a lot of weight in a country like the U.S.? And so it's really about having a conversation and they can see the pictures of that conversation that we're having, right? And then they begin to see, well, what can I do? All right, do you vote? No, can you vote? Yes. Or do you vote? Well, I have a felt. Okay, what kind? Okay. Did you know you could vote? Yeah. You got to go through this step and that step and that step. And why it's more difficult now in Tennessee, but the person believing and knowing that what they have to say matters, right?
Mm-hmm.
My message to them is that you're just as much a part of this country as anybody else because your ancestors, they survived so that you could carry on that torch of freedom
mm-hmm.
and get beyond where we were. Civil rights went to a halt. We saw leaders being killed, you know, whether it was Martin, whether it was Malcolm, whether it was Kennedy's, both Kennedy's, whether it was Fred Hampton, you know, whether, you know, it was Huey Newton, whether it was, it's so many people that, you know, and the men, fear created you look at the movement, and I know I'm going deeper into what you was thinking, but, and then you're like, what a man at, you know? And so here we are. My message is it's time for us to stand up. The women are already doing it. You look all out in the movement, you see the women. You don't really see the men. At least not African-American, you know, fighting for things, or not fighting, but standing for things.
Yeah.
You know, my message is that you need to be standing. And I'm like talking to a prison population. I'm talking to young boys, African-American boys mostly, but you know, and that your voice matters.
And that leads me to my very last question for you then is, so there are a lot of emerging advocates like myself that are trying to step into this space and work with you all though, and learn from you all. What is it that we can do to become better advocates and to be more informed about criminal justice reform or even just civic engagement in general?
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely not a whole, it's more than this session, but what I'll say is, I would first say, embrace your story if you're directly impacted or indirectly impacted. Harness and hone that story in a way that when you talk about why it matters to be in this space, mass incarceration, voting, enfranchisement, like have your reason why you're in that space. So when somebody challenges who you are, you can say, look, you know, I'm here because, and then you follow with that, right? That's one way. Having relationships with people who survived the prison industrial complex. Real relationships, calling folks up. Hey, I was thinking about this, uncle, dad, brother, sister. I was thinking about and having real authentic relationships so that you can consult when, you know, you might have some questions, some concerns. But I'll say, as I said earlier, understanding that you're a very unique person and that you didn't just come into existence just to follow somebody's instructions that you never met or to follow some rules and some processes and traditions that you didn't help create and influence. I'm saying as a young emerging leader or a young emerging participant in the society, critique the society. Ask questions when you feel like something or you think something isn't correct. You have a right to interrogate that. You have a right to have a conversation about that. And then you have a right to create action steps. And as you realize, we realize how important the media is, because the media helps shape narrative.
Yeah.
If you can be a narrative shaper, you can be one of the most powerful people in the world, because when you can tell a true story and it resonates with people who are just ordinary folks, I mean, it goes so it goes so far. You know, it's like, that could be me. Mm-hmm. If you really kind of see it like, because all of our stories matter. Because the minute a person says dismisses anybody's story, you're saying that you're more important than that person. And that's not true. Because I was taught that it's easier to hit the lottery than to be born. Mm-hmm. So if you just made it to the planet, you got a purpose. And you have to wake up every day, at least the way I view it, and say, hey, what's next? What can I do to make a difference? How can I impact change in a positive way that does not exclude or deny somebody else, or that does not harm somebody else? How can I be transformative in my thinking? How can I be a part of what moves the needle in this country towards an evolution in a pure power sharing? Because we live in a republic. We talk a lot about democracy, but you're not going to find that in the United States Constitution. It's not in Tennessee's Constitution. And so we talk about democracy, we got to understand what we're trying to superimpose on a republic, because they were thinking one thing when they originated this, but you know, things evolve in time. How do we dance with law, with order? How do we dance with the people creating a culture that everybody can be proud to be a part of and to participate in? Mm-hmm. I mean, this thing is deep. That's what I'm saying. The conversation has to continue because it just can't be like, because like you really do matter. Like me saying like you matter. I can say you matter, but like you really got to say, I really matter.
Yeah.
I was born. I need to do my job or I need to participate. You know what I mean? I can go on and on about it, you know?
No, I appreciate it. And I think it's given me something to think about as well. Because I think, and just being very transparent, one of the things is I don't really embrace my own story sometimes of, like I shared with you, of my grandfather and even the experiences my mom had
right.
with individuals and our family members.
Right.
And so just knowing that and embracing that, I think is really important in knowing your why.
Yeah, I mean, just if I may extend, and I hope that however you chop this thing up, piece it up, is that, you know, you use every part of it that matters in a way that gets the type of message you need to get out. But, you know, when I was caged, my grandmother died. It was the first time that I felt pain and no one had hit me. And then when I went to the funeral, I didn't really understand what was going on because I never had experienced death before. This is 1988 in juvenile facility for auto theft. And that experience kind of took me to the dark side. You know, that's when I actually committed my first offense. I did a robbery. I thought I got away, but you never really get away with anything if your eyes witness it. And 9 months later, I found myself in prison after a fight with my stepdad and moving in with a friend of mine and saying, you know, being told that you got to go back home, and going back home was going back to hell. I commit this act. I shoot a gun, the floor, bullet ricochet. It hit someone. The man died 72 hours later. My intent wasn't to do harm, but I did harm, right? And so here I'm this 13 brothers and 5 sisters, really pretty much raised by a single parent mother. Now here it is, I'm facing, you know, according to the attorney, a death penalty. And I mean, how do I survive this artificial environment when I don't even really understand why it all happened to begin with, right? And so, you know, criminalizing immaturity, you know, it's like, you know, in one sense, criminalizing, you know, mental illness, because, you know, you can't grow up in violence and not be affected, right?
Right.
And so what I'm sharing with you now is like, this is a story that never made it into the criminal legal system. So we don't say the criminal justice system.
Yeah.
We say the criminal legal system because, yeah, it's legal, but it's not just, because justice would have involved my whole real story. But it didn't happen like that, right? And so I just want to say, and so when I'm in prison, you know, my dad dies first, 95, they put me in shackles and chains, and I'm visualizing I'm seeing his body, I'm right there, seeing all my family members here, and my mama hugging me, she smelled like a pound of smoke, and then I'm looking at this man, and it's like, I'm having a Tupac moment, you know, in the sense that, like, my anger won't even let me feel for a stranger. This is my dad. 5 years later, my sister is in that same kind of situation, Cassie. I'm looking down at her, and she was murdered. Total different experience, right? And then having been the cellmate with 3 of my biological brothers, I mean, me just telling you this, that is my real story. That's not what the public gets to see and get to hear and know about, right? But that shaped circumstances, extenuating circumstances and situations that led me to the point to where I am to this day. So I didn't survive 26 years in prison for nothing, right? So embracing my story, and my mama saying, like, son, you know, you don't have to tell everybody you've been in prison. My mama didn't understand that I had a mission.
Yeah.
You know, but her feeling some shame that, I want everybody to know my son. Yeah, they already need someone in prison, those who know you, but they not gonna care because your son is gonna live his life so intact with law and integrity and transparency, and as the butterfly was once the caterpillar, he's gonna fly, and you're gonna be proud of your son. Just give your son some time. You don't have to feel that shame. It's like, you know, and I'm not embracing your story, the truth of it. Sometimes people might not make the right connection, because if you criminalize an immaturity, you're criminalizing an undeveloped brain, you're criminalizing mental illness, you know, if you're criminalizing the bad choices that somebody has made, and it's making you feel shame the way you can't even own that. It touched you. It influenced the way that you thought. It's power in that real truth. So yeah, embrace it. Because we all need help being free. You know, freedom ain't just walking out of a prison. This thing right here, it has to walk out that prison too.
Yeah.
And that's layers and layers and layers of bars and wires and fences and, yeah, it's the Matrix, you know.
We talked about that. Yeah. Go watch the Matrix.
Yeah.
No, I really appreciate, because I think that spoke to me a lot, so I appreciate that. Before we end, though, I do want to ask, is there anything you feel like we need to share with the audience that we haven't talked about that would be critical for them to know?
I would say that for everyone who watches the podcast or watches how you put this together for other people to see, is that we are one. It's like a Frankie Beverly song. It's we are one, right? Mm-hmm. These false identities, and when I say false, I'm saying whenever it can conflict and create discord, something is wrong with it, you know, because we're all humans first. Let's connect in that common humanity first before we adopt all these other ideas about, you know, like, because the question I'm saying we got to keep asking is, who am I? Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I might have showed up as the Muslim brother. Yesterday, the day before, I might have been a former thug from the streets, a gang member, or, you know, some other identity. But in my humanity, I can't look past you. I mean, it's not much difference in us, you know, some variations. And for me to have, you know, this some kind of disdain, I'm wrong for that. So I'm gonna just say the last message, embrace your uniqueness, your individuality, but your humanity, and never let anything beyond your humanity make you feel like you're inadequate. Because the fact that you are what you are, and it doesn't even have to be a human, you know, you can just be an expression of life. But don't let nobody put something in your face to make you be ashamed of that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because you're way bigger than the external world. We all are.
Well, I appreciate the conversation that we have had today, and I hope our audience has learned something from this enriching conversation. So make sure you stay tuned to our future episodes, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for the opportunity. Enjoy it.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of More Life, the Reentry Podcast. We hope today's conversation has provided valuable insights and inspiration for your own journey or the work you're doing to support reentry. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners and continue to bring you powerful stories and expert opinions. For more resources, updates, and to connect with our community, please follow us on Instagram and Facebook at More Life The Reentry Podcast. If you have any questions, suggestions, or would like to share your own story, feel free to reach out to us at the email provided in the description box. Remember, reentry is a journey, and together we can make a difference. Until next time, stay inspired, stay informed, and keep moving forward. This is More Life, the Reentry Podcast, signing off. The content shared on More Life, the Reentry Podcast, is for informational and educational purposes only. The views expressed by guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the podcast. While we strive for accuracy, content may be based on research, personal experiences, or opinions. Research is subject to change as new data emerges, and content may also vary from person to person. This podcast does not provide professional advice or recommendations. Listeners should consult with appropriate professionals for guidance. Please note that some discussions may also have sensitive topics, therefore, listener discretion is advised. This episode of More Life, the Reentry Podcast is funded by the Paul Simon Democracy Award. We thank you for supporting our mission to bridge the gap between scholarly insights and lived experiences.